again, basketball gamers, and welcome to episode number 203 of the NLSC podcast. I'm Andrew, with you as always. Joining me this week is Kenny.
That's a sweet intro right there.
Playing off our clip that we ripped from NBA Live 16, so unashamedly.
I mean, I had to think of something new, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's the first thing that came to mind for some reason. Because he says it every single time you do a really nice move in NBA Live 16.
He does.
It's like, oh, that's a sweet drive right there, or, oh, that's a sweet move right there. That, and he always, no, it's Breen that always mentions how many rebounds a game Steven Adams is averaging. So it's usually one of those three things.
Well, you know, Breen's got that line about ghost of the goal. And we when we first heard that, we thought, oh, that's not basketball, goal, whatever. But I have actually heard him use the term goal on an actual ESPN broadcast. So apparently he's trying to bring that in, I guess. Trying to make it happen. Then,
well, you know, if it's working for him, you know, more power. I never really thought about calling the hoop a goal myself. But, you know, if that's Breen terminology, then I'm going to adopt it because he's definitely one of the top broadcasters in the game at the moment.
Well, he's broadcast more NBA finals than anyone else. The 10 to Marv Albert's 9 now, I believe. I think last year was his 10th. And I've actually come to like Breen. I mean, Marv Albert's probably my all-time favorite, but Breen's pretty good.
Yeah, he's very solid. And definitely a good pick for the EA Sports franchise.
But I do have a couple of other audio clips from Live 16 that I might have to put in there, or maybe get one from 2K just to spice it up. But hey, you know, we're going on 200 episodes and I haven't come up with a consistent outro yet, so we just wing it on this live show that is actually pre-recorded. So we are here with episode 203 of the NLSC podcast to talk about our past week in basketball gaming news and what we've been playing, of course. And there's some exciting news this week, Kenny. We've been talking about NBA Playgrounds. We've both been really excited, have we not, about the new arcade game coming?
Yeah, definitely. Just looking at a few more trailers of it, it kind of reminds me a lot of NBA Street Home Court, and that's pretty exciting to me.
And they did mention that it's obviously Jam and Street inspired. There's an article from Polygon has come out just today when we were recording this, or at least within the last 24 hours, and it has confirmed the release date of May 9th. So next week, not long at all to wait at all.
Fantastic. Yeah, bring it on. I'm definitely looking forward to it.
And in the Polygon article, which included both impressions and some more new information about the game, they did admit that it's a bit more Jam than Street. And in the gameplay, I can kind of see that as far as some of the dunks are a bit more Jam-like. But there's definitely some Street elements in there, which I think will cater to both tastes.
Yeah, I kind of noticed that there is very much a Jam look to it, or at least kind of like an NBA Hangtime look to it, as far as its aesthetic is concerned. And Hangtime was from the same company as Jam, wasn't it?
Midway, yes.
Yeah. So, I kind of see that there is a bit more of a Jam to it. I think, for me, the Street part comes in where it looks like the baskets are more than 2 points, or there are like some... don't want to say multipliers. What's the right word?
No, multipliers is the word they're using. So that's what I'm running with too. Yeah, multipliers.
Okay. So yeah, that's kind of something that looks like they've kind of taken influence from Street. So yeah, it's definitely an interesting combination. There's that word again.
Yep.
but yeah, it's a good combination of both the games, and I'm definitely eager to see how it works out.
It looks like a good combination. I think it is going to appeal to both. Just looking at some of the notes that I made from the Polygon article here, speaking of NBA Jam, there are over 300 dunks in the game, dunk animations, and you can definitely see that Jam influence on those, as I said. A bit more information about the lottery wheel, the lottery pick, and the lottery pick boosts. They include hotspots that multiply the point value of the shot, and even debuffs for the opponent, such as halving the length of the shot clock. So that's kind of interesting to get that. That reminds me a little bit of the Incredible Basketball and International Basketball that I talked about, I think, on last week's show from the European developer, I can't remember, that has the arcade one, which I think was Incredible Basketball now that I'm thinking back. Just some of the boosts there where you could make an ice block appear above the opponent's rim and things like that. So it's So it's kind of that kind of power-up as well, not just powering yourself, but the debuff to the opponent. Here's something that's rather eye-catching. Interesting, even. the shot clock is going to be 12 seconds rather than the usual 24. And, of course, if you get the debuff that halves the length of the shot clock, that would take it down to 6. So that's a curious change that they've made. And I guess if the pace is quick enough for the game, it makes sense.
It does. And with that in mind, the Rockets might be the best team for that game, actually.
The old 3 seconds or quicker Suns back in the day.
Nah. Yeah, the retro Suns aren't in the game, are they?
Nash is. Might be his Lakers. I think it's his Suns counterpart, his incarnation, if you like, is the one in the game. So.
Oh, Nash is going to be perfect for that game by the sounds of it.
So he'll run at home in 6 seconds or less, shot clock, if he gets hit by the debuff. No debuff at all, yeah. So at first I saw that and thought, oh, that's a bit weird. But then I thought, well, the pace of an arcade game, I guess the old 24 seconds of jam and hang time and everything back in the day, it was probably a bit too cheesy. You know, you could just hold onto the ball and run around and avoid the shove if you could. And just you could run some clock where this time you actually do have to put it up in 12 seconds. And did anyone really take up the 24 seconds that often in in jam? No. I didn't get many violations back in the day. It was mostly when I was trying to get fancy or something.
I mostly got, goaltending violations in that game, I think.
I think the only time I would have got shot clock violation is when I was trying to set up an alley-oop in hang time, just getting the teammate in position to do that, and then it...
Oh, I forgot you could do alley-oops in hang time.
First one you could do the alley-oops, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And of course, there are alley-oops in this game as well. In the Polygon gameplay video did show them looking a bit tougher than some in previous arcade games. So it looks a little bit less cheesy, actually, which is... perhaps a refreshing change of pace for an arcade game.
Definitely. That would make it better as far as playing online is concerned, because you actually need skill in order to pull off those alley-oop plays, so that's cool.
Absolutely, and speaking of online, with offline play, there's four-player local multiplayer, similar to previous arcade games, so that's a nice throwback. If you've still got friends that come around and sit on the couch or in front of a computer, that was actually still possible. And at launch, there'll be two-player head-to-head, and there's going to be an early update that will add four-player online capabilities as well. So eventually, online will be four users, two versus two as well. So, that's pretty crucial these days. On Fire Edition did that by EA Sports, of course. So whether you're playing with friends, locally or online, it's eventually going to be another great multiplayer experience.
Yeah, I just hope that the patches aren't too big.
Well, on Steam at least, they'll be fairly small. Well, I'm assuming this is going to be released through Steam. Most PC games, digital releases are these days.
Yeah.
Except EA games, which of course come through Origin. And is it Uplay? Is the Ubisoft's?
I'm not sure for Ubisoft, but definitely Origin for EA games, because I have to run it every single time I want to play The Sims 4. And yeah, that's the only reason I have an Origin account.
That said, if EA wants to release NBA Live on PC, I'll happily take an Origin release over no release. So just throwing that out there.
That's a great idea, actually. Get more people using Origin. So
it's been a while since I pimped a piece of the idea of the PC version on the podcast. So maybe at least 2 or 3 weeks. So hey, there you go.
We've got your back, modding community.
Absolutely. Players are unlocked with card packs, though there won't be any microtransactions, at least initially. They do mention that there's a funny quote here. Let's see, scrolling through the article about microtransactions might even... Oh, it says, there are no microtransactions in NBA Playgrounds, although the developer said if there's a demand for the ability to buy card packs, they can always add that feature later. So that's... I don't think there's going to be too many people who demand microtransactions unless it's set up to really require them, but it doesn't sound like it is going to. It sounds like it's going to be unlocked fairly organically with the packs, and the packs they showed in the Polygon video were a good mix of sort of the top players and the other players. I mean, with the smaller roster, pretty much everyone's a prominent player, I guess.
Yeah.
But and if you get a double, that adds 100 XP to the player, so that's a neat feature.
That is a cool feature, and It's nice to hear that they are kind of reluctant to add that microtransaction feature, although, I don't know whether that's PR spin or something, because you don't want to openly admit that you want to take people's money, but, it is good to hear that, they will add it if they see it as a necessary evil.
And especially since they're not established with basketball games at this point. I mean, 2K, while we have our criticisms of the game and certainly the microtransactions and the VC aspect in some respects, I mean, they are an established brand. You know, we most people buy the game every year. So when they offer that money, most people seem to be a bit more willing, I guess, to pay an established brand than a brand new game like this.
Yeah, definitely. And they're pretty much the only game on the market at the moment, like save a few indie titles and whatnot. So, I mean, they definitely have the luxury of doing that. So, yeah, it would be harder for a game like Playgrounds that is coming like into the market as a new player and kind of expect some more money off of that. Yeah, that'd be kind of an unreasonable expectation at this point.
You know, I looked up that game that you were talking about last week. Is that Freestyle 2?
Yes.
Freestyle 2. And it's free to play. But there's a DLC for certain skins to like $55 US.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's where they get you.
Yeah, definitely.
That's not a microtransaction. That's a game.
Pretty much.
That's a maxi transaction. That one. But
it's kind of like, I guess, like Rocket League and, well, it's not that expensive. But, I mean, Rocket League's not that expensive, but... And I also thought DC Universe Online as well kind of had something similar where you could pay for more, but it's initially free. So
yeah. I remember checking
premium, I guess.
Premium, pretty much. So we talked about the roster reveal. I think it was last podcast or the week before. No, it was last week, the roster reveal, yeah. Each team has at least 3 active players in addition to retired players. More players will be added later. Specifically noted that Charles Barkley and Kobe Bryant are 2 players they don't have access to. So... don't expect them, and I guess Michael Jordan is also exclusive to 2K, so don't expect him either, but you know, maybe some other legends and certainly current players. And they also note that roster updates are going to be a part of the post-release support, so yeah, they're not just gonna, it doesn't look like they're just gonna put the game out there and abandon it, which is obviously great news.
Yeah, it's always great when a company supports the game and gives you new features you know, along the cycle. So yeah, that's a really great feature for them.
And you brought up Rocket League, and they've done that too with a couple of different game modes, including the Hoops mode, which is very tough. You know, it's not often that I prefer a soccer game to a basketball game, but with Rocket League, the soccer game definitely works out a little bit better than trying to knock it up into the hoop. But it's still a fun challenge. But speaking of post-release content, also plans of possibly adding a dunk contest and 3-point shootout post-release, and I'm guessing there'd be free updates similar to what Rocket League has done. So again, that's great to be adding that kind of content post-release.
Definitely, and I would like to see what they do with the dunk contest in particular, because recently the dunk contests for games have been kind of a little bit lackluster. And
agreed.
When I say that, I mean pretty much primarily the 2K games, where it is essentially time the button presses and stuff like that. And I remember thinking NBA Live 06 had such a more intuitive system as far as the dunk contest was concerned. So
nodding my head in total agreement. Yeah, absolutely. I don't think any game has done the All-Star Weekend or the dunk contest in particular as well as those live games did from 2005 through 09. I was a real big fan of that approach. And I mean, you mentioned it, them being lackluster in 2K. Of course, in live, since then, they've been lacking. So,
yeah.
You know, to get any kind of dunk. Although, Street Volume 3, Street V3, I should say, on PS2, did have a dunk contest. But it was kind of tough as well from the...
Okay.
From what little bits that I've played of that. Really need to get back and do a Street retrospective for Wayback Wednesday. Give me an excuse to pull out all the Street games and play them again. Except the PSP ones, which I don't have. But, yeah, so that's some really positive news all around. I guess the only thing that I'm really not sold on that much on Playgrounds is it's the purest of me that I'm not too thrilled about the extra point values, the multipliers on the perfect releases and everything. I guess because it's new and I'm too perhaps old school and, you know, I want my NBA Jam, damn it. But it's something I'll definitely give a chance because you don't know how it's going to play, and it's a brand new experience or based on older experiences. So yeah, I'm happy to give it a go.
I am as well. I do see it being exploited online, but yeah, definitely willing to give it a chance.
And we'll be able to do that May 9th. I'm guessing I'll be picking that up for PS4 so we can play some online, although I might double dip and get PC as well, because if we can mod it, then some of those missing players, perhaps not an issue anymore.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. I'm sure we can get some people in the community to get onto that.
I know there's been interest, so we'll continue to cover that, and if we can mod it, I'm sure there'll be some downloads popping up sooner rather than later. On to another topic now, and this is another, let's say, an interesting remark, another eye-catching remark that piqued my interest, and this is from gameplay director, I believe is his title, certainly one of the gurus of gameplay over there at Visual Concepts, Mike Wang, aka Baluba, and he's talking about the automatic green releases, which we've touched on a couple of times before, and this credit to at BallStreet2K, the Lockfather, on Twitter, who put this up in a nice little graphic here with the quote that was posted over at OS, I believe. And Mike says, automatic greens have really corrupted people's expectations for shotmaking. I'm trying to slowly wean everyone off them so we can get gameplay back to where it was originally supposed to be, an NBA sim. And Kenny, that's definitely, a comment worth talking about, I guess.
Absolutely, and I think I pretty much agree with him on it.
Mm. I'm in two minds about it, because at one hand I do like having that guaranteed shot, especially online. But at the same time, it's not necessarily sim, because as we've found so often in 2K Pro-Am, if people get that, once they nail the timing and they've got the badges and the ratings updated, it is very cheesy. So I guess it's a matter of having that optimal release point, which would be similar to what NBA Live has done with their shot meter.
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, the only time you should really be getting green releases are when you are basically on an island on the perimeter and there is nobody within, say, half the court of you. Mm. That's when I think green releases, that's when I think you should be getting them, and when you should get a guaranteed shot, because you watch the NBA and when that happens, you see a player, takes their time, lines up their shot, and it's pretty much an automatic shot. So I think that's when we should be seeing green releases, and I am for green releases being more rare if, the full white bars and those kind of releases give you a bit more leeway.
Yeah, no, I agree, and that was supposedly patched recently, or tuned in an update, I should say.
Yeah.
But haven't really noticed too much of a difference online or offline. And I did see a video that someone posted the other day, and I sent it through to you and Ben, that they were getting near perfect releases and it wasn't working out for them at all with some good looks. So I agree. You need to tune that. If there is no guaranteed shot, then certainly close to perfect releases, or perfect releases need to be high percentage for a start, and close to perfect need to be similarly high, not as high, but similarly have a pretty decent chance of going in for good shooters, at least. Because it goes back to, you look at the problem with NBA Elite 11, and they had the right stick shooting. So if you mastered the angle and the timing, you could make hook shots from three-point range. And that was the big problem with Elite, is the shooting mechanics. Good idea in theory, but the execution just wasn't there. People talk about Elite 11 and it obviously had problems, but yeah, 2K then it went ahead and adopted the right stick shooting, and a very similar one in 2K17. I think they did a lot better, but the cheese has definitely been there, as we've seen so often, exploited it offline. I think we've all been able to do that, and online certainly we've either exploited it or had it, suffered exploitation against us.
Yeah, definitely. Then there needs to be something done about the green releases and just overall shooting in 2K, and I'm going to say this again. I don't know what the answer is, but the automatic greens are definitely giving people, I guess, a sense of entitlement in a way, because, they're expecting to hit green releases because they're used to timing the shot so well. And, it kind of annoys me that people are going for optimal shot releases instead of a shot that's kind of closer to what they're doing in real life. Like, once upon a time when I was creating a player, I would go for the jump shot that was closely mimicked the one that I have in real life, even Same. Though I could never get the base down because apparently I've got a really funky base to my shot. But
it is, and I used to build my player that way too, and that works for my career, but you take it online and you really need to optimize that player, you know, with the archetype, especially now, and the animations and everything. It has become about min-maxing and creating the perfect build as opposed to the perfect replication of yourself, I guess.
Yeah, and it's kind of been a bit of a problem I've had, I guess, with online, is that everybody's going for that perfect shot release instead of the one that is kind of individual to them. And, you know, I guess I like individuality in basketball video games. So that's what creating a player is all about. It's like putting your own spin on an NBA player. And, you know, if everybody has the same jump shot because a particular YouTuber is suggesting it, then everybody's just homogenous at that point.
Yeah, I mean, since that is the way it's set up, I can't fault people for doing it. I mean, we ended up doing a bit of that ourselves this year from time to time and experimenting with jump shots. But it's not ideal. It comes down to, you know, like Dazar's Creed, you know, don't play video games, play basketball. But with a mechanic like with the automatic green made shot on the green release, it really is playing a video game because there's a mechanic to master. And I mean, I guess you always have to master a mechanic. At the end of the day, it is going to be a video game no matter what, but it is a very video game approach or tactic, I guess. You know, it's, you know, you go back to NBA Playgrounds, which is, you know, you get the perfect release and you get the extra points. It's almost like that, except a bit more of a sim take on it, I guess.
I think my best suggestion, actually, as far as like the release system is concerned, is just take away the bar online altogether and make people rely on, you know, seeing their jump shot and timing it as far as like, yeah, the eye test, I guess they would call it. You know, that would be a great way to do it, particularly for competitive people, because that way they would have to learn their shot release and not have to rely on the bar. I think that's a great idea, actually.
That would definitely be challenging, and I guess, yeah, it might eliminate some of the cheese. And I know I might shoot a bit better if I'm not focusing on the bar even. So if you know the shot, you're not looking at that delay, I guess, on the bar as well with the lag. So
yeah,
it could be better all around.
And looking at the person's hands as far as, like, you know, where they are vertically and whatnot, it might give you a better vision of when you have like an open shot as well, because if you're looking at the bar, you're looking down at your feet and you're not necessarily looking at the person closing out on you. So it could make you better in the long run as well. And if 2K really wants to put like an emphasis on making a gap between competitive players and casual players, I think that would be a great idea, because the competitive players are probably going to know when the perfect release points are, and it'll just widen that gap, I suppose.
Definitely. And again, to quote Dazar, you know, playing basketball, not video games, as much as you can with a basketball video game, I suppose. You know, I guess that kind of transitions into our next topic, which is, you know, the approach that 2K has taken with NBA 2K17, which is still to be an NBA sim, and obviously that is the focus that Mike has moving forward, and I'm sure the development team in general. But a lot of people have really criticized, you know, at least within our community, I've seen a bit of it at OS as well, the tweaks to the gameplay and the tuning updates, you know, that they've felt that they haven't really improved the game, that they've spoiled the offline experience, and there's been accusations that the tweaks have been focused on online, and that has ended up ruining the offline play. Now, I think you and I would both agree that some of the tuning hasn't actually really helped online as much as we'd like, so it's kind of no one's totally happy with some of the tuning updates that have been pushed through. But there has been a suggestion that 2K has been focusing perhaps a little bit too much on esports.
Yeah, I think they're definitely focusing on esports a whole lot more now, particularly with that, you know, new league being announced and stuff like that, and the competitive road to the finals. That's what it's called, right? Like that whole thing.
Road to the finals was 2K16. This year was the All Star Challenge. Yeah.
All-Star Challenge, all right. So, you know, that whole playing for cash and stuff like that, they're obviously going to put a lot of emphasis on esports because they've got money riding on it. And it's a big way for the community to get involved. And, you know, I think that's where the future is for 2K. As much as I like the offline modes and stuff like that, I think they're definitely putting a lot of their eggs into the esports basket.
It seems that way, and arguably to the detriment of the offline experience, which we admit that we may be dinosaurs in that respect, but we're not alone. We're not alone. And we have seen those criticisms of the way the focus on esports and the online 2K Pro-Am, even just not even the tournaments, but just simply online in general, has affected the offline experience and taken attention away from other modes. Although obviously great work is being done, but you can definitely see where people are coming from. That's something that 2K is going to have to work out and reconcile, of course. But I wrote an article earlier this week, the Monday tip-off. Oddly enough, comes out every Monday to tip-off the week of basketball gaming at the NLSC. And this week's topic, I sent it through to you guys, you and Ben earlier this week, and to you again this evening, the Monday tip-off. Should NBA Live 18 be more traditional? And basically, yeah, suggesting that Live 18 take, you know, and traditional it sounds like a buzzword in this case, but basically I mean looking at that offline experience, not abandoning the online experience, because Live Pro-Am is a great concept, but bringing back, you know, some of that old, not old school, but it's hard to explain, but the offline experiences like your franchise and your career modes and everything, and focusing on that and kind of taking a traditional old old school approach in some ways with the new approach and new technology. And there's a line that I think I cut out of the article, but it was kind of like, basketball gaming, the way you remembered it, only better. But basically, anywhere that 2K has kind of gone in a direction that perhaps gamers haven't really liked, especially ones, gamers like us, who are perhaps more traditional offline gamers, that's a market that Live could really capitalize on and cater to if they, they can still do their online thing, absolutely, and they should. But really sort of bring people back and say, hey, this is, you want a really great sim experience with Dynasty and Rising Star and everything, here you go. You know, that could be a way that Live could really reestablish themselves and win back some of the fans.
I think so. I've been thinking about this a lot, actually. And, originally I thought that Live needs to focus on Pro-Am because I thought that was a great hook for the company. And, you know, I played the mode and I saw great potential in it, but now I'm kind of in another train of thought and thinking that it should go in a more traditional way, because currently 2K is in that esports spot with Pro-Am and all the competitiveness and whatnot. And I think that in order for Live to kind of compete and potentially be a game that people will buy to coexist with 2K, they need to offer something that 2K, I guess, is straying away from, and that would be the offline franchise modes and stuff like that, and put more of an emphasis on those, because that was really the lifeblood of NBA Live for pretty much the entire 2000s.
Yeah.
And I think, they definitely need to go back to that. And I'll let you talk for a bit, because I had another point, but I can't think of it at the moment.
Not to worry. No, I mean, you and I could both attest to how much we've enjoyed Dynasty over the years, and yeah, you know, and then Association, of course, My League, My GM, etc. And you can see all the stuff that 2K has done with My GM, My League, and that's kind of the template of what Live needs to do, I think, getting a lot of that stuff into the game, the customization, the sandbox features, the depth of those modes, because Dynasty is okay in the last few Live games, but it's not even as deep as it was pre-reboot, like to NBA Live 10, so it definitely needs to have some more depth. Rising Star as well. And I think this is a case, I mean, there's obviously, you know, FIFA has done the storyline in there, so I wouldn't be surprised if Live kind of adopts that a little bit in Rising Star as well. But I think they'd do well to avoid it and simply have like a deep mode similar to what My Career was before the story-driven approach came in, like up to 2K14 last gen, where, and I actually reflected on my NBA 2K13 My Career in this week's Way Back Wednesday, and as I said there, the fact that I was, you know, drafted by the Nuggets at the 20th pick after a so-so showing at the rookie showcase, and then I kind of worked my way into the lineup, and then Ty Lawson went down with an injury, and suddenly, even though I was a shooting guard, I was thrust into the starting point guard role and then developed into this playmaker, and that's why I've been a point guard in subsequent games, because I really enjoyed that experience. And combined with the cutscenes. What cutscenes were they? Oh, the interview cutscenes, the press conference cutscenes, where you could choose which kind of answer you have, and that determines your character and your chemistry and everything. That was pretty much all the story I needed, because it told the story through gameplay and, you know, the occasional press conference cutscene and a bit of the flavor content, like getting having the GM meetings and having the virtual Twitter and what else? And I guess some of the billboards and things like that. That kind of told the story, and you were able to... And I guess maybe it's just because you and I have always done the story threads, so we're kind of old school in that respect as well. But I think Live could have great success going old school like that, going back to basics, as I said at the end of the article, and appealing to people who feel a bit disenfranchised with some of the changes in direction of 2K.
Definitely, and I think I've got a very kind of, I guess, very basic understanding of all this, but as far as I'm concerned, if you put like resources into, say, a story for NBA Live, those are resources that are being taken away from somewhere else. So if they, say, do go for a very minimalistic approach, like we're kind of suggesting, they can put those extra resources in places that, you know, really need them, I suppose. So
No, that makes sense. I mean, obviously, yeah. different developers, different engineers working on different parts of the game, but it's all things that have to come together and be finalized by the time the game goes gold. So... No, I think that definitely makes sense. And in this case, minimalist doesn't necessarily have to mean shallow. You know, you can have a very deep mode. Like, my career up till 2K14 last gen, still a very deep mode. I mean, 2K17 had a really good approach, I thought, to my career. The best it's been since they went the story-driven approach, where you had the cutscenes, but mostly it is told through the gameplay and the connections, you know, get you some VC, or they get you perks and bonuses here and there. So I think they had a good approach. Strip out all the storyline stuff, and I think you've got a pretty good template that Live could follow for that. And the fact that Live Pro-Am and Rising Star, they're connected, but they're also separate in so much as you can upgrade the player in one mode and not the other if you don't want to play the other mode. I think that's a really good approach as well, keeping that... Having them connected but separate, if that makes sense. You know, that was another thing I touched on in the article. And also, limiting microtransactions. I mean, that's the other thing, is that people really hate microtransactions. And, you know, as much as we've both indulged in it, regrettably, sometimes, I guess.
definitely regrettably.
And Live only has microtransactions in Ultimate Team. And of course, you don't have to buy cards, much like my... much like my team, you can earn them through challenges and whatnot. So if they limit the microtransactions, that's also saying, hey, you know, that's kind of an old school approach as well. You're like, you can buy it, but if you don't want to spend any money, you can go the old school route and just earn everything in game, even with the online stuff, which is not totally old school. But yeah, I think it could really work for Live's advantage. I mean, they need to do other stuff with the gameplay and the game modes and everything, but simply having that, you know, for lack of a better word, traditional approach, I think would show a lot of goodwill and could be an alternative to something that 2K is perhaps moving away from, arguably.
I really admire that that system for microtransactions as well, because Ultimate Team and my team are like two modes that really lend themselves to microtransactions, in the sense that you are buying card packs and, you know, you need to use money to buy those card packs in some cases. And by doing that, by making microtransactions only in that mode, you're also ensuring that people who are playing online are only updating their player by doing the most amount of grinding in like the either online mode or in the career mode. So
absolutely,
I'm very much for that system, because it doesn't inflate that person's abilities too early on. Like, it doesn't give them a 95 overall rating when they're really probably only a 75 skill wise, like as far as like an NBA, as far as like a gamer is concerned. So yeah, I hope NBA Live sticks to that that system, because I do think that it is one of the areas that they have an advantage in.
And 2K17, you know, to its credit, did take a good approach by capping that initial microtransactions at 88 overall. And to get to 95, you had to grind through the season. It really was a grind. I didn't get to 95 till very late in the first season, playing 12-minute quarters. But I do like Live's approach. As you said, you can't pay to win. You've got to put in the hard yards. You've got to grind your way up. And live starts you at about 72 to 74. So it's not as bad as 2K's 55 is probably having to grind up from. So, yeah. And of course, you have the separate currencies, RP for the reward points for the clothes and gear, and the skill points for the ratings upgrades, and it skips you off a few points at a time in each category as well, a few rating points. So live system is actually quite fair. And again, that's kind of old school, that approach. So it's another one, old school, traditional, use those terms interchangeably, I guess. But it is that approach that is very fair to gamers, and it's not based around microtransactions. And yeah, it could. I mean, EA has probably burned its bridges with a lot of gamers, understandably so, with some of its business practices or simply letting people down with the releases. But on top of winning people back with the solid product, which it absolutely needs to be, showing the goodwill and having a great approach to the way they're designing the game for the hardcore basketball gamers. You know, it goes a long way, and I think it really could benefit them.
Absolutely, and I think a big part of EA's resurgence as far as like the basketball market is concerned is that they need to, I think, I don't know what the exact percentage is, but a good percentage is definitely gameplay, but another one is how they manage their community, because that is a big part of, you know, when you're dealing with any game, really, because there are so many games that are purely, not purely online, but like there's a good chunk of them that is online. And, you know, 2K is definitely one of those games where if you're not online, then it's very limited. So, yeah, community management is definitely a big part of any strategy for gaming companies.
So no tweeting about Barbie games, basically?
Probably not the best idea, no.
Certainly wasn't. So that is something to, I guess, keep in mind, and hopefully, you know, we do get some great news about NBA Live. As we've said so many times before, we'd love to have those two great games back on the market. That is, of course, looking ahead. We've been looking ahead, I guess, all podcasts, Kenny. NBA Playgrounds, future 2K games, NBA Live 18. But you know, we are playing the games that, or the game that is out at the moment, of course. So with that in mind, it's, I guess, time to talk about our week in basketball gaming.
Puts it down! What a play!
Oh, that's a sweet finish right there.
Now, I have to give you some credit here, Kenny. We played a My Team Online. Sorry, yeah, it was My Team Online, wasn't it? Head-to-head. Is that what they call it?
Play with friends or something like that.
Play with friends, know. That's right.
Yeah.
Now, I did win, but if you did not have the lag and if you had not done me the courtesy of not breaking out all your best cards, you would have won. I will have to say that.
Well, I think you're selling yourself a bit short there, because I think you did play very well, but lag was definitely a big part of my experience in that game. And when you're missing free throws with a prime Jose Calderon, who had a 98 rating, there's not very much of an advantage for you there.
And not just, it's funny with the misses, because at my end as well, I saw them, the way they hopped up and changed arc mid-flight. It was, which I think Mike has said before about, and it's the same with them hopping out of the basket. It's just the way that the game has chosen the arc, and it's with the delay in the server and everything. But it definitely looks very funky. And for it to be happening with, as you say, Jose Calderon, who was like, what, shot 98% from the free throw line that season? Something ridiculous like that.
I think, didn't he have a record for most consecutive free throws or something like that? Or he was very close to it?
He came very close to breaking Michael Williams, who is, of course, spelled Michiel Williams, who played for the Timberwolves. Actually, his rookie season was with the Pistons, won the championship in 1990. I didn't know that until I looked it up.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I mostly remember him playing for the Timberwolves, which is where he set the record. 93 in a row? 97 in a row. That's right. So I think Calderon actually got very close and then missed one. But, yeah, ended up shooting like 98% on the season. So the fact that you missed them, yeah. You were entitled to feel a bit miffed about that, for sure.
I did manage to get a few good highlight plays. I had, like, that triple alley-oop that I was pretty much... I was just, like, kept tapping the triangle button and hoping for the best. And sure enough, I got, like, the silly alley-oop play, too. I think it was Steve Smith. It's either Steve Smith or Chris Webber, one of those two. But yeah, that was pretty funny. I There was also a really nasty alley-oop dunk I did with George Mirosan as well.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
Because I remember doing it, and your reaction was just priceless. They were like, oh, just like, it was so big for like he didn't even really have to get off the ground because so damn tall.
7'7", yeah. It was entertaining to see, yeah.
It was such a violent throwdown.
At the end, with about a minute left or so, I had a run out to a lead a bit with the lag had come back to... because, again, this is why I say you easily could have won that game, because I had you down like 17-4 or something at the end of the first, and then you came roaring back once the lag cleared up momentarily, so that's why I say it was competitive. So we have to play again without some lag. We need to see, because it was fun. Yeah. But yeah, towards the end, we were just mucking around and seeing where we could throw lobs from, and you know, you went all the way with Mirosan that time, which was funny. Just you turned into a dribble drive artist, George Mirosan.
Yeah, I think... who was it? It was a Brook Lopez I beat off the dribble with Mirosan.
Yeah, it's pretty funny to watch. And then we're just doing stuff, and then you pulled out the triple alley-oop, and I'm just going, whoa, 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 whoa. And it's just, yeah, it was, I recorded that too. That was because I wanted to watch that again. That was great. Spoiled, of course, by the update required in the footage, sadly, slightly, but
yeah,
we're no stranger to that with our Pro-Am highlights, I guess.
And yeah,
then
definitely.
Then that big dunk, and it was just doing some fun stuff at the end. But what we need to do next time, because I've got a Sean Bradley, so we need to do Sean Bradley versus Mirosan, I think, next time, the battle of the big white stiffs.
So. I have Manute Bol as well, so I can definitely... we can have, like, a full 48 minutes or however long it is in those games of, like, I could have two, like, an entire game of 7'7" centers, so... That'd be cool.
That would be pretty funny. You can also add a couple more Ruby players. I forgot I had a Ruby Bellinelli, which I put into my lineup now. And yep. I opened up either the Beast Pack or a Playoff Pack. I think it was the Beast Pack because I had the VC for it. And got a Zach Randolph, a Ruby Zach Randolph.
Oh, so you actually got a Beast in your Beast Packs. I didn't.
You didn't get a Beast. You didn't get... what's his name again, did you?
No, I opened up my Beast Pack, and I got... Who was it? Player for the Washington Wizards. It was not John Wall or Bradley Beal. It was Kelly Oubre Jr.
Not even Otto Porter Jr. So.
No. Another junior.
The wrong junior.
From the Wizards. Yeah. I mean, you know, Kelly Oubre, I'm sure he's a very good player, but...
not John Wall.
he was a bronze card. So that was disappointing, particularly when I spent 10,000 MT on it.
On a Beast Pack, I just had the VC to spend, so I thought, I'll see. And then Ruby. And as we discussed last week, apparently that's just total luck of the draw. It's not stacked, so...
Yeah. I believe it. I mean, I've gotten some good packs before, so I actually did get a Ruby. I think it was... in the playoff moment pack, but I already had it because it was JaVale McGee, and I already bought that one. So the Ruby JaVale McGee is actually really cheap. So if you want another Ruby, for like, I think it's, you could pay like 1,000 to 1,500 or something for Ruby JaVale McGee. So it's a hot tip right there.
Hot tip. Stack my deck with, we should do some different lineups, like our wackiest lineups, like all centers or something, and just see how we go against each other with all our centers. It's
have Gary Trent as my point guard. That sounds good. So during the week, I also completed, there were four moments challenges, because I remember I was about to tweet that I was really disappointed that they didn't have any moments challenges for the second round. And just before I hit send, I looked at the menu again, moments challenges, and they were there, so
forced it through again.
I'm glad I didn't send that tweet out because that would have looked really stupid. But that was a fun. Those were fun moments challenges. I hope they keep pushing those through for the conference finals. I would like to see another four, but have one for each team, because the way they've got it at the moment, they have four, but you don't get to play as each team that's competing in the playoffs. It's like for the Celtics series, you had to play as the Celtics. You couldn't play as the Wizards.
Oh, okay.
So I found that a bit disappointing because I've got I've got Murasan, I've got Manute Bol, I've got Chris Webber.
Webber, yeah.
So I've got a bunch of wizards that are really good. Dandridge as well. He's a reward card for when you complete the wizards collection. That's another thing. I completed my historic Dallas Mavericks and ended up with Rolando Blackman.
Oh, Rolando Blackman, of course.
I almost said Orlando Woodridge, but yeah, Rolando Blackman. That's who it was.
Rolando Blackman. Remember him making, watching it on tape, of course, making the free throws at the end of the 1987 All-Star Game to force overtime in Seattle back in the day, and screaming at the basket in delight when he did that. Fine player.
He's an A-plus three-point shooter, so it's a nice player to have in my lineup.
I did complete the challenges, not the bonus challenges, but the other challenges that are up there at the moment. So I got the trophy for completing a set of those and all the MT that came along with that. Started on Domination, finally, and first game, easily beat the Lakers and got the, because again, stacked team at this point for the against the Lakers, easily got over the 400, I think it was 425 or 435 MT that you earn in a game. You get the three stars. I've got the three stars. I got D'Angelo Russell for that one. So
that's a decent card to get, I think. Like, I think D'Angelo Lowe is quite a solid silver card.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I guess I don't need him immediately, but it's good to have him there in reserve. Again, especially since challenges in my team, you do need to have players from certain teams to do, which is... actually, there is that requirement in Ultimate Team. Ultimate Team does have some of those challenges where you've got to have a certain amount. So, except I think there's just a certain amount of gold, silver, or bronze, or all gold, etc. Anyway, so I got Russell for doing that. Hit the 175 cards in the collection. So I got the Q-Rich, the Quentin Richardson card, which
I
think you've said before was quite an effective one with his three-point marksmanship.
Yeah, very effective. I remember he was one of my better cards towards the start. So, yeah, he's a nice player to have.
So I got into that, and yeah, getting into a bit of my team and enjoying it, because again, I really had fun with Ultimate Team and having pulled all those great cards from the 200,000 VC that I spent on those packs, the box, a couple of months back. Yeah, I've actually got a pretty good team to go with, so it's been fun to get into a bit of that.
Yeah, and I noticed that on the My Team Twitter, they said that there would be another 10 weekly challenges over the next 10 weeks, and I was kind of disappointed because I did the math and I realized that I won't be able to get the final pink diamond card. I think I'll miss it by like two tokens. So kind of disappointed by that, but I think it was it's a pink diamond Bob Pettit. So, you know, as great as I think Bob Pettit was, it's not a huge loss to me because I can't say I'm a really big fan of his. So
kind of way before our time. And
yeah, definitely. I think that's the reason.
It's because I remember getting a trophy for getting a legend player in Ultimate Team. I think it was Live 15, and the legend was Bob Pettit, actually. So, funnily enough, it's cool, and he was a great player in his time. And he built his St. Louis Hawks beat Bill Russell's Celtics in the finals in 1958. So you know, and I actually think he's now tied with Kobe, tied him for the most All-Star MVPs with four. So he held that record for many years. So obviously, you know, pioneer of the league and everything. But yeah, I guess like me, you'd probably want those players from the 80s and the 90s and even the 2000s more so than some of the 50s and 60s guys. It's not as, it's a bit harder for us to get too hyped up about them, I guess, because we never watch them play.
Yeah.
That's cool that they're going to keep those. Keep those going. So that's 10 weeks. Well, that's beyond. That's to the draft, wouldn't it be?
Yeah, I think so. So you know, if you end up getting to those weekly challenges and getting those tokens, you might be able to get. Who are the original initial ones? Do you remember which card you unlock with the tokens at the moment? Was it Robert Pack?
Robert Pack is the one that I've got that I'm working towards. Yeah.
Okay, so I think it goes Robert Pack, and then I think the next one is Michael Cooper. So that's a ruby, I believe. Yeah,
it's a pretty good card. Yeah,
you could get Robert Pack and potentially Michael Cooper as well.
That's right.
Might not Might not be able to get Kevin Johnson, though, unfortunately.
Oh, well. Got Jay Williams. Got Chris Paul. Chris Paul, who's with the talent for fishing.
Yes, that's true. Yep. That's true.
Yep. Well, that's what the bandwagoners say anyway.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So, just looking, I made some notes of what else I've been playing this week. Ben and I got a Prime game in. You set out because, you're a bit over the online, and also with the lag, you didn't really want to risk it as well. So Ben and I got on there, played with X. Everyone scored in double digits and shot over 50%. I had a 20-assist game, which I was happy about. No lag at my end this week, so I was pretty happy. Not too many frustrating moments, and we absolutely mugged an opponent on a block. It was like...
Yeah, I saw that.
If he threw his controller and swore at the game, yeah, he was entitled to do that because he got robbed on that call. We've been there, but it was pretty bad. So we got away with that.
And he probably had like a touch foul on the other end as well at some point in that game. I can just imagine.
A few plays later, I'm pretty sure he did, or certainly someone on the team did. And yeah, that was. We were waiting for a message. Actually, well, we don't ref the games, so you can't blame.
Well. You weren't, taking charges or anything, so there wouldn't have been any point of him messaging you there.
No,
yeah, screw you for the game's mechanics.
Yeah, what's he going to say? You beat us by, 20 or 30 or whatever it was. So it was a fun game. So we X had to go anyway, but we were pretty happy to call it a night after the one good game. So as you know, sometimes we used to stick around too long and play that one or two games too many. wreck the experience. So then Ben and I went into my park. We won the first three games we played, and we were feeling really good. Like, oh yeah, this is we're just kings of the court here. And then we mentioned, of course, that we won three in a row, and that we were close to getting the five in a row trophy, which of course jinxed us, and we just got shut out 22-0 in the next game. Then came back against the same team and played them again, and we were up. We were down 16-17, and I hit Ben for a layup, and it was a shot clock violation. And if we'd scored that and make it take it, we could have won that game. But just that final swing back, and then we lost that one. So we said, "Oh no, we'll call it a night." But it was actually a pretty good night of Prime and Park. So every once in a while, and I think that's the way I'm going to approach online. Care less for a start, as far as getting hyped up about it, but also. Yeah, just every once in a while rather than doing it every week, because we definitely got burned out, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely the feeling that I got from it as well. I could see myself coming back to it at some point, but at the same time, I think I might wait until 2K18, make a different player with a different archetype and, just try something new, I guess, because at the moment I felt like I've kind of done everything that I've wanted to do online, except maybe get those My Park trophies, but I can live with that without getting those trophies, I think.
I do find My Park a bit more casual, and the games are a bit quicker, so you're not... of course, sometimes you're waiting around for the game with the Got Next system, and 2-on-2 is kind of brutal in that respect, because there's less 2-on-2 games than 3-on-3, etc. I'm keen to get in there for a few My Park games every now and again, and the occasional Pro-Am, but... over 450 Pro-Am games on the team. It's time to be more casual. Play it once in a while, I think. So, that's pretty much all I've been playing for the past week. Anything else? I haven't played any my career, actually. Just been online in my team. It's kind of different for me, but fun. Anything else that you've been doing this week?
Just the my team challenges, mainly. My team? Not much outside of that, actually.
You didn't pick up the Cinemaware? I mean, I was thinking about it, the Cinemaware collection.
I thought about it, but I ended up picking up another game, which is fairly amusing. But, I might pick it up at some point. I ended up getting, I think, this week I spent my money on the Disney Afternoon collection. So
That's a good choice. It's probably a better choice, actually. For the retro gaming experience, but I wouldn't mind picking it up and seeing what it's all about for a Wayback Wednesday or something, so yeah, might give it a shot. But I guess that's all for our week in basketball gaming, and before we wrap up the show, thought we'd talk a little, as always, about what's going on in the real NBA as well. we say talk about it briefly, but the playoffs are rolling on. There's some big stories, so I'm sure we'll have a bit to say, but I'm sure that everyone else in our audience are pretty passionate basketball fans as well, so they'll want to hear about it. We're going to talk about it anyway. So NBA playoffs are in the second round. Not too many surprises with the results, at least for the Warriors and the Warriors series with the Warriors and Jazz, and the Raptors aren't putting much of a fight at all against the Cavs at the moment. I thought they'd be a bit more competitive, but you know, LeBron is playing pretty well and the Cavs are on fire.
Yeah, honestly, I wasn't really expecting a very competitive series, and I think it's the case of kind of expecting LeBron to get through the Eastern Conference unscathed. So, you know, I guess that's my expectation of him now. And I think it's the expectation of many NBA fans the world over. Like, is anybody really expecting LeBron to be challenged at all in the Eastern Conference?
And I've brought up before, it's the whole thing. You know, he's made six straight finals, but the East is weak. And I tweeted it out today and said, you know, can people not see that those two statements are not compatible with one another?
Yeah.
You don't want to take anything away from LeBron. You play who you play. You got to get through, and you play the team from the West, which is a very strong team of the Warriors the past couple of years. So, yeah, but the East is just not competitive enough, so it has to be taken into account. LeBron is moving up the all-time playoff scoring chart. He's now second all-time, only to Michael Jordan. He trails him by 210 points. He passed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in the game. And, of course, the fanboys are going crazy. Did you know that LeBron has already far surpassed Jordan?
Yeah, man, I knew that ages ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Jordan was nothing but hype. You know, 90% hype and 10% skill, sure.
How much power of will is in there?
I'm glad that you went there, because I was definitely thinking it as I said it. LeBron is averaging 28 per game for his career in the playoffs. It's likely that he's, you know, this season, barring injury or surprise elimination, you know, in the second round, he's going to surpass Jordan, become the all-time scoring leader. No mean feat. You know, hats off to him. Being the bitter, insecure hater that I am, at least according to one ESPN analyst, I will point out that LeBron has played 205 playoff games to get his 5,777 points. Jordan's 5,987 came in, how many is it, like 179? So with Jordan's average, which is tops of 33.45 per game in the playoffs, that would actually be around about 6,800 with 205 games. And, you know, people focus on totals a lot, I think. But, you know, you look at... And again, I sound like the hater, you know, going against LeBron and everything. But people like Vince Carter or Paul Pierce, great players, of course, but they've scored more points than Larry Bird. But I wouldn't rank them higher than Larry Bird.
Probably not. Not at this point. You know, Larry's contribution to the game, as far as, like, he's a kind of figure that supersedes, or not supersedes, what am I thinking of?
Transcends?
Transcends, yeah. He kind of transcends the generations, and he's a real icon of the game, whereas, you know, Vince Carter's got a little bit of that going on, but, yeah, probably not to the same skill level as Larry. Larry could do pretty much anything on the court. He was very skilled, and, you know, both Pierce and Carter are as well, but not to the same extent.
Or, you know, a Dirk Nowitzki, 30,000 points, you know, he's going to pass a few people. Possibly even Kobe, but I would still probably rank Kobe above Dirk. So,
as much as it pains me to say it, I probably would too. But you know, I think with Dirk, he's kind of like one of those real unicorn kind of players, or at least he was when he came into the league. Now he's pretty much set up the prototype for the stretch big. So,
although even Larry Bird was kind of the prototype in some respects. Like Dirk and has got very similar numbers in some respects to Bird actually.
But yeah,
you look at Dirk's career numbers, and they surprise you how good they are. I mean, you always knew he was a star, but it's until you reflect on it, you're like, wow, you know. And he's coming back for season 20 next year, so
yeah, like he is an absolute beast, and it's weird that it's something that people can overlook. Like, I do it myself. Like, it's like, yeah, I know he's a good player, but check out those numbers, and he's an all-time great. And I think he gets overshadowed a lot because he was rivaling.
Yeah.
There's no ring in there, Kenny. Just like there's no ring for, you know, a few players in the league
I was going to say Dirk got his ring. So
yeah, definitely. But he was rivaling the greatest power forward of all time in Tim Duncan for most of his career. So
and KG for many years too. So
yeah, I mean, those two are definitely in the top five power forwards of all time. So,
and,
you know, it's easy to be overshadowed when that's the case.
And Dirk, of course, you know, for many years people said he was the best European player in the NBA, which he is. They also say Ginobili is a great European player, which is strange because Argentina's in South America, but he did play in Europe before coming to the NBA, but he isn't, unless Argentina has shifted dramatically.
Those people didn't take geography in high school, I'm guessing.
Clearly not. You know who did take geography in college was Michael Jordan.
Oh, wow. Well, okay.
Mentioned. Yeah. He knew he was going to become a worldwide phenomenon, didn't he? Ha-ha. But, I mean, Dirk has that distinction, which he actually has, but, you know, forget any other qualifiers. He is one of the best players in league history at this point, I think. So, you know, he's not... I mean, it's still being the best European player these days. It's still a distinction in and of itself, but...
Yeah.
He is, you know, beyond any qualification you want to give him, simply one of the best players. But getting back to the LeBron situation, we were talking about it before we started recording, and you noted it's probably in future generations people might look back at LeBron as we look at Jordan. I think Jordan's legacy is probably going to continue through the decades. You know, it's very hard to forget, but you know the way that people act, you know, sort of trying to downplay Michael Jordan and hold up LeBron as definitively head and shoulders above everybody else, which I think is a bit too much, and I still place Jordan at number one. But again, previous generations, as you noted, they'd be doing that to Wilt or Russell or Kareem or you know, the players of yesteryear, you know, 20 years ago when we started watching basketball. Now, scarily, it's 20 years later now.
Yeah.
And I guess now we're the cranky old men. But I guess the thing that bothers me is that back then, you know, if you were anti-Jordan, you were supposedly smarter because you weren't a sheep who thought Jordan was the best. And the 80s and 90s kind of get it from both directions. And I think it's because it's held up as such a golden era that people think, oh, it's just nostalgia. And some of it might be, absolutely. You know, there were things about the 80s and 90s that weren't as great as certain things in subsequent eras and seasons. But I think the 80s and 90s do hold their own. I think Jordan still has a very strong case for greatest of all time. And I think we're getting to that point where LeBron has played enough games that a lot of the records are going to start to fall. But that Jordan fellow, he's still got quite a few distinctions that, well, in some cases, LeBron's not going to match because he doesn't have a college championship, if nothing else. So, and he didn't star in a hit movie with Bugs Bunny. So, and that's really, you know, what else would make you a great player except to be in Space Jam? I mean,
isn't he supposed to be in Space Jam 2, though?
Blasphemy. There's rumors of it, but you know, as much as I enjoy Space Jam, that's a movie that doesn't need to come back. It's like White Man Can't Jump. You hear Blake Griffin's doing the new one or producing the new one.
That's fantastic. I want to see that.
I mean, it could be a spectacular train wreck, I suppose, but you know, if it's not Woody Harrelson, I've been watching some old Cheers lately, actually. So. All about the Woody Harrelson and his comedy at the moment. So, but yeah, it's. I guess we're biased as biased as the people, but it probably bothers me more than it does because I pay too much attention to some of the comments on Twitter. But I saw some earlier today and just I had to disconnect. I'm like, nah, it's don't get drawn into this argument, Andrew. It's just not healthy.
I think it's the case. Like, I agree that Michael Jordan is far superior to LeBron James, but at this stage he's probably only just superior, like not by a short margin, but I would only say superior, not far superior, because I do think LeBron is climbing up those rankings and
top 10 at least top 10 all time.
by the end of his career, top five, is almost a certainty at this point.
If not already. I mean, people say top three or top two or even, again, top one.
Mm.
Top 10, definitely.
Yeah.
You know? Only because, not because LeBron is not a great player, it's just we've had some really great players, not just MJ, but, you know, your Birds and Magic and Irving and Roscoe Robertson and Kareem and Hakeem. You know, Hakeem doesn't get a lot of credit, you know, and yeah. Shaq and Kobe. Yeah,
and Duncan.
And Duncan.
Duncan's up there too.
Duncan, absolutely. Sorry, I interrupted you. I think it's a fair point that, you know, you said sort of slightly ahead or just ahead, not close or not necessarily close, but still kind of close. I think the way I might put it is it's not disrespectful to mention them in the same breath.
Yeah.
But I would still mention MJ first. I would definitively mention MJ first, but they can definitely be named they can be in the same sentence. They can be in that top 10 together, absolutely.
Yeah, I would say that as well. And I think as far as future generations are concerned, unless people become like absolute students of basketball, they're probably always going to put LeBron first because that's what they know, and they're not necessarily going to look back at statistics or back at old tape or anything like that.
Perhaps.
So, you know, I think that's where LeBron's going to be seen as the greatest of all time to a lot of people. And because, you know, going back to the Jordan era, when I was watching basketball when I was a kid, I wasn't looking back to, say, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Julius Irving, who was a real innovator back in the day.
Sure.
Or even Maravich, you know, someone like that who
absolutely
was insanely entertaining and was a real innovator of the sport. So I think that's where a lot of people, like, that's where they're going to get that notion that LeBron is the best of all time. And, you know, I disagree with him, but I understand why that will be the case.
Oh, sure. I guess being the Jordan fan and you know, sort of knowing the arguments for MJ, it bothers me that you know, ESPN in particular are probably going to present LeBron as the best of all time. That they're going to present that narrative at some point.
But let's emphasize something here. ESPN.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Or BSPN if we were particularly snarky about it. But you know, the fact that I guess we had to put up with it back in the day of, you know, oh, you're just a uneducated sheep. You know nothing about the history of the game, that you're saying Jordan is the best and Jordan ruined the game by emphasizing dunks. And then, you know, these days you criticize Stephen Curry for taking a lot of threes. And, oh, you don't understand. The game is in transition. It's changing. And
So wait. Jordan ruined the game by emphasizing dunks. So I'm guessing Julius Irving just didn't exist?
No, so he was an innovator. Jordan ruined the game.
Gotcha.
And again, it's, I guess, that kind of the era that I grew up with kind of gets it from both. It's like all the people that rag on millennials, I guess. It's just like, you know, to quote The Who, talking about my generation. a Who reference on the NLC podcast, I would not have thought. And I guess it's one of those things, you know, it bugs me in that respect that it, because, you know, oh, I feel I'm right, which everyone else does as well. But it sort of feeds into my pet hate that, funnily enough, to, you know, pet peeve that any arguments against today's NBA or whatever is just dismissed automatically as being a bitter, jealous, nostalgic hater. Like, it's kind of the whole thing these days that any kind of criticism can be dismissed by saying, oh, you're a jealous hater. So, you know... Didn't like Kanye West jumping up on stage in 2009? Oh, you're just a hater.
Well, if that's the case for Kanye West, I'll agree to that.
Oh, fair.
But yeah, definitely. No, I'm kidding. As much as I'm a fan of Kanye West, that wasn't one of the better parts of his career for me. But, you know, I will only throw that argument out there to people who say that the league is watered down or that say, like, you know, this generation of millennials is the worst generation ever. No, it's not. They're not the ones who voted for Trump. So they're not the worst ever. I'm sorry. I don't mean to get political, but, you know, Just throwing that out there.
Some may disagree. I won't. We have very similar political views, so I will not disagree on that. Yeah, I mean it's like that, and it's me caring too much about other opinions when, you know, and is that again, it's me wanting to feel like I'm in the right, I suppose. But it is what it is, and you know, as much as I've gone on about it, and I don't think that LeBron surpassing MJ's totals, especially in more games, means that he's better. I mean, by that mark, Carmelo is the second best player in NBA history, you know, or at least the regular season. And I don't think people would rank Carmelo ahead of Jordan and Kobe and Shaq and Wilt and everyone else that he passed. But is what it is. And hey, you know, it shows LeBron's longevity and how healthy he's been able to be. You know, so I absolutely have to give credit where it's due.
Yeah, he's had an amazing career, and you know, we're not suggesting otherwise. I think that's something we need to point out before we get labeled as jealous haters.
Oh, well, that's going to happen anyway. So
yeah, that's true.
But that said, if the Celtics and Spurs could meet in the finals, I'd love that.
That'd be fantastic.
You know what?
Or Celtics and Jazz. I'd like the Jazz.
I don't even mind the Celtics and Rockets in the finals, actually. And then Russell Westbrook gets the MVP with less than 50 wins, because that would actually be a repeat of the 1981 season, basically. The MVP with less than 50 wins, and the Celtics and Rockets in the finals. And I wasn't around for 1981 the first time, so this will be all fresh to me. But yeah, Celtics and Spurs, I would prefer, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see the Jazz getting past the Warriors, but no. It's unfortunate, but anybody who was going to win that series was basically just going to be second-round fodder for the Warriors.
No, and it's funny, they talk about revenge for 2007. Like, really? I think the 73-9 and the championship in 2015 were kind of revenge and redemption for the Warriors. Because, of course, they lost to the Jazz after... And hey, they upset the Mavericks. They can't be too unhappy about that.
The Gilbert Arenas Jamal Crawford team, wasn't that?
Baron Davis.
Baron Davis, okay.
Baron Davis and I think Monte Ellis would have been there at the same time as well, yeah.
Was Gilbert Arenas on that team, or was he on the Wizards that time?
He was on the Wizards. The first couple of years of his career was with the Warriors, and then he went.
Okay.
Then he was went to the Wizards the year after Jordan retired.
Right. All right.
So speaking of we'll get back to Spurs and Rockets because that's a pretty interesting situation there. There's the word again. the Celtics, you know, beat my Bulls because I own them. It's the terminology, people. They beat the Bulls, and the Bulls are reverted to what we know they are. Mediocre to the nth degree, sadly. Isaiah Thomas, who's had a rough go, to say the least, losing his sister tragically in the car accident, and you know, came back, they won that series. On his what would have been his sister's 23rd birthday, came out and led the Celtics to an overtime victory against the Wizards, put up career-high 53 points of... Certainly, career playoff high, 53 points. Not that many players have scored 50 in the playoffs. By the way, Jordan has the most 50 points. and you know, it wasn't 70 points as Devin Booker did. Devin 70. It's getting to that time of night. But yeah, 53 points for Isaiah Thomas, or what, 5'9" of him, or whatever he's listed at. Yeah, I mean, so much skill, so much heart in that young man.
Yeah. It's just been amazing to see what he's done this playoffs and how he's played through that adversity. It's kind of made me want the Celtics to come out of the East. And, you know, before I would have said I wouldn't have cared if the Cavaliers made it all the way to the NBA Finals. But now I want it to be a series in the Eastern Conference Finals if they both make it. So, yeah, just love what he's doing out there at the moment. Even if he carries the ball sometimes, I don't really care.
steps over the line on free throws occasionally, maybe.
But, you know, Hoiberg's just a hater, so whatever.
That's funny, because Hoiberg... I don't know if Hoiberg's a hater. He's hated. But
hire Hoiberg.
Hate magnet. Oh, no. Well, he's coming back, so... But, yeah, no, I mean... Isaiah Thomas, the last pick of the draft in 2011, coming into his own at age, I say young man, 28, I'm 32, so that's, he's young to me, damn it. 5'9", listed at, could be closer to 5'7", fearless, relentless, as you said, dealing with all this adversity and everything. It's, obviously, you don't want to make a glorify or anything, the tragedy, that's a terrible thing for anyone to go through. You wouldn't wish it on, but to me, that's kind of been one of the stories of the playoffs, that's resonated with me, that he has had this tragedy, and he's just been a total pro, and that he has become this star for the Celtics, especially after, being given up on by teams that are probably kicking themselves about now.
Oh, yeah. Particularly the Kings, I think. They've just been in a shambles since he's left the team. Mm. They've been in a shambles since probably Chris Webber has left the team, but...
pretty much.
It's just... The guy, he didn't need that tragedy to happen for him to overcome adversity in the league. He was the last pick of the NBA draft?
The 60th, yeah.
Draymond Green did that video where he read every single player that was drafted before him. Well, Isaiah Thomas would have to read the entire draft.
Yeah.
So, for somebody like that just to be overlooked until that point and then come into the league, be an all-star, not just an all-star, but potentially the fifth best player in the league as far as MVP candidates are concerned. And this is a guy who not only drafted 60, but as a lottery pick, the Sacramento Kings had Jimmy Fredette ahead of him.
Yeah.
So he wasn't even the first point guard to be drafted in that draft by the Kings.
No.
So, yeah. I'm just wondering what he thinks now of the whole Jimmy Fredette being drafted ahead of him, and oh yeah, that was pretty funny.
I have Jimmy Fredette. According to people who know Jimmy Fredette, he believes he is the best player in that draft. I think that the history might prove him wrong on that one.
Probably, but, yeah.
But do you notice that number one pick of that 2011 draft?
Number one. Who was number one? Is that Davis that year?
No, he's the next year.
Right. You'll have to give me the answer to this one.
It's the player that he'll likely face in the conference finals, Kyrie Irving. So that's going to be the number one pick.
Right. Kyrie. Pick. That's right. So, there was a time where the Cavaliers were a really bad team.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I completely forgot about that almost.
Of course, 15th pick that year, Kawhi Leonard. So doing pretty well. And Jimmy Butler at 30. Maybe the last great pick that the Bulls made.
Was Dion Waiters that year, or was he the year after? I think it might have been the year after.
He was the year after, yeah.
Because he was number four or something from memory, or at least, yeah, somewhere along those lines.
Kenneth Freed that year?
Yeah.
No, 22nd. Actually, Mirotic, drafted by the Rockets that year. So, yeah, that could be the first overall pick in the 2011 draft at point guard versus the 60th at point guard for the Celtics. So that's... There's another subplot there for the what seems to be what's shaping up to be the conference finals at any rate. And of course,
yeah,
John Wall was the number one pick in 2010 for the Wizards, and they've had a pretty fine season. But I think the Celtics are going to prevail there. They've got off to a pretty good start.
Yeah, I think they probably will as well.
Golden State, I had the opportunity to watch the Golden State game the other day, and I didn't. And I saw the score online and said, yeah, I'm not going to bother tuning in halfway through. The Spurs and the Rockets. Now that's an intriguing series. There's a variation on interesting. The first game, Rockets just destroyed the Spurs, with their 3-point shooting. Spurs came back and won big in the second one. But perhaps the biggest story is Tony Parker.
Yeah, he's what's the prognosis on that injury? Have we found anything out?
Pop says not good.
Right.
So,
well, that could... one of those Popovich answers, or was it actually, honest, truth?
Parker was helped off the court, didn't leave the court under his own power, is from what I remember, so it is quite possibly a truthful answer. I'm just firing up the scorecard, so look at any news on Yahoo NBA. Tony Parker injures leg, carried off floor during Rockets game. Looks like it would be. It's sounding pretty serious at the moment, I guess. So could be out for the rest of the season. Rest of the series.
in any case, I think it's a great opportunity for Patty Mills to prove what he can do at that starting position, because he's always been on the verge of being, like, I guess, a starter in the league, and he's been very good for the Spurs in the role that he has. But I want to see what he does with that extended period as in the bigger role. I think it's a very exciting time for him.
We need Olympics Patty Mills to come on with it.
Yeah, I think so.
Or even Game 5 of the 2014 Finals when he was hitting all those shots against the Heat.
Yeah, I just want to see what he's able to do, like with the point guard duties of the Spurs. Like, he's got enough great players around him. He can kind of, I'm just excited to see what he can do. Let's just say that
it's a great opportunity, and we're obviously a bit biased being Aussies and everything. Mm-hmm. In case people hadn't noticed. Tuning in for the past however many episodes. That is, we are biased in that respect. But yeah, no, it'd be great to see him. It'd be great to see him, see what he can do. And, you know, obviously a blow with Parker out, but if ever there was a time for him to shine.
Definitely.
So, got it down here. Of course, the Jazz eliminated the Clippers in 7 games, and which was kind of bittersweet in some respects. You know, the Clippers, as much as they've been able to pull it together and be a respectable team for the longer stretch since they moved to Los Angeles, probably since they were the Buffalo Braves, actually, these last few years, but it's never really worked out with them. We touched on that last week. But with their elimination, Paul Pierce has played his final game in the NBA.
Yeah, I was hoping he would go a bit further, you know, just so we could kind of see him, it would have been cool if the Clippers actually played against the Celtics, because we would have seen like a bunch of, a great farewell tour for him there, for both the Clippers and like the Celtics arena. So, it's been a great time to reflect on what he's done for the game and, you know, what he's achieved throughout his career. And, you know, it's one of those things that really perplexes me. When I see in the comments stuff like Paul Pierce was the only Celtics captain to win only one championship or something like that. And I'm like, one, that can't be right. Two, he's probably one of the only ones that had to play under a salary cap. Like, when was the salary cap brought in?
1984.
So I guess probably Bird did as well. But
of course, that's why they created Bird rights, so that the Celtics could keep him under the newly established salary cap.
But yeah, it's like back when the Celtics won, 11 in a row, they didn't have those restrictions. So
yeah, back then, and free agency.
Not comparable situations.
Yeah, the 9 in a row and the 11 in 13 years, the 10 appearances in the 10 straight appearances. You want to talk LeBron's 6 and possibly 7 straight finals appearances. Bill Russell has 10. So if that's the 12 appearances in 13 seasons. And 11 championships in those 13 seasons. So, I mean, if that's the measure, forget LeBron, forget Jordan, forget everyone, but Russell, I guess, if that's the measuring stick.
Yeah, 11 in a row. I was thinking of the St. George Dragons in the rugby league, so wrong sport there. But,
yeah, but 9, yeah. 9 in a row and 11 in 13 years, pretty close. And there was no salary cap, no free agency at the time, so definitely different eras.
But, Paul Pierce was one of those players. He came into a pretty tricky situation. Like, I think, wasn't Pitino still the general manager of the team or, operations guy around that time?
I think so. I think he was still just at the tail end of his couple of years run with the Celtics
That was a very tumultuous time for the Celtics because the team was very up and down. It was kind of coming out of this era where, I don't think the 90s treated the Celtics very well. They didn't fare very well through the 90s.
As the big three retired and then Robert Parrish was, traded or signed with the Hornets in the mid-90s, that was the whole thing, with Jerry Krause, the late Jerry Krause and the Bulls, that he wanted to avoid what happened to the Celtics falling apart and of course, did the complete opposite and it happened anyway. But, yeah, the Celtics were... I think they made a token appearance in, I think it was 95 in the playoffs.
Yeah.
But apart from that, they weren't in the playoffs for most of the 90s. Certainly the latter part of the 90s, they were down the bottom of the league. Missed out on the Tim Duncan sweepstakes, infamously.
Chauncey Billups. They drafted and traded mid-season. So
to the Raptors,
that was one of their questionable moves because he, as we all know, turned out to be quite a good player.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think what Paul Pierce doesn't really get credit for is the fact that he kind of helped the Celtics become a relevant team again.
Yeah.
And, you know, a big part of that probably was Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen and, you know, that kind of Rondo as well and that team. But at the same time, he made it to the conference finals where Antoine Walker was probably the second best player on that team at that time. So,
you know,
You know, it was definitely not a case. Well, not for me. It wasn't a case that, you know, he didn't achieve anything before that team was, you know, created. As I passionately argued, I guess once in the party hangout. But probably not so eloquently. But
it was funny though. I agree. And the thing that perhaps gets me about Paul Pierce is people really seem to harp on the whole fake injury in the finals, and wasn't it just a precaution that they put him in the wheelchair and then because he heard a pop and then it was just the tape, so he came back out. And yes, it's not exactly Willis Reed coming out on the torn hamstring, but I don't know, the whole faker thing, it just seems to be a bit blown out of proportion and discrediting him for, you know, it was an injury scare and then it turned out to be not serious. He came back, didn't milk it or anything the rest of the way in the finals, just came out and played and won.
And that's what gets me about people who made fun of LeBron for cramping up as well when back in, I think it was like
2014.
Like, if you have cramps that bad in your legs, you can't walk. What's he going to do, stay out there and be useless for his team? No, he should be on the bench. But yeah, you know, I think Paul Pierce has had more of an impact on the game than I think a lot of people realize. And, you know, even fellow team member X pointed out that he probably could have won the Rookie of the Year when he was in his rookie season. So,
Certainly went lower than he should have been, if nothing else.
He, you know, I don't...
More candy.
That was the Candyman draft, I guess. But
some sour candy.
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't say Paul Pierce is in like top 20 or anything like that, but I wouldn't think it's a stretch to say he's in the 50 best to play the game.
Yeah,
I'd put him in there.
If you redid the NBA, well, this year we can do NBA at 70. Top 70, top 60, top 50, whatever list you want to do, you know, compiling those last 20 years, yeah, I think he's earned. And yeah, probably top 50, I think. That's fair to say. But,
yeah,
and it's great that he's going to retire a Celtic because he's going to sign that one-day deal like Amari did with the Knicks.
That's a really nice gesture.
And I guess we'll see more players doing that in the future. And yeah, I have no problem with that. It's kind of like a ceremonial thing. I imagine his jersey will be retired by the Celtics as early as next season. So yeah,
They have to get that done.
I think that's
they definitely do.
Perfectly appropriate, I think. And perhaps if he still feels like playing, he can play in the new 3-on-3 league that's finally going to make its debut.
Fantastic. That was a great segue.
Oh, I've been doing this for quite a while now. It's one of my less ham-fisted ones, actually. So this is the Big 3 league, is the 3-on-3, and it's Allen Iverson is one of the, I mean, he's one of the captains, but isn't he sort of like really involved in getting it off the ground as far as like, I thought he was one of the driving forces.
He might be. I mean, I'm not entirely sure. This is really the first time I've heard about it, but I could see him potentially, you know, being a big part of this. I'll let you talk a bit more about it, I guess, because I don't know a whole lot about it. I'm just seeing the lineups now for the first time. Well, I mean, not now, but back when you showed them to me before the show.
So the teams, you know, this is a 3-on-3 league, obviously, the Big 3 league, and a lot of the teams really play on that. We have Three's Company, Three-Headed Monsters, Tri-State, Killer Threes, instead of Killer Bees, and the logo is very much like a Killer Bee, so that's kind of good, and Trilogy. So, yeah, the three is really a threem, as I said, to be horribly pungent about it. But anyway, The teams have been drafted. A couple of players missed out, including Kendall Gill. He was not happy. And, well, he's still got his analyst job, and the guy can box too. I wouldn't want to tangle with him. But so running down the rosters real quick, it's very, you know, if you grew up, I guess, the era that we did, watching in the 90s and the early 2000s, you know, through the 90s into the 2000s, this past decade or so, you'll recognize a lot of the names. So Three's Company, Captain Allen Iverson with co-captain of Damar Johnson. There's a name, as you noted. Andre Owens, Mike Sweetney, Ruben Patterson. And Allen Iverson is also the coach of that squad. So he's player coach.
Here's an interesting thing. Has Allen Iverson, I know I'm jumping the gun here, but it has him as captain and coach. But as for one of the other teams, it has player coach for another team. So
Charles Oakley is the player coach of the Killer Threes. Yeah, but he's not he's not the captain.
So do they have an extra player on that team? Oh, no, they don't. Never mind. Oh, wait.
They kind of do,
They do. Huh.
So they've got an alternate beyond the three players. Three-headed monsters, captain is Rashad Lewis, co-captain Jason Williams, Kwame Brown, Eddie Basden, Muhammad Abdul-Rauf, and the coach is Gary Payton. So Payton's not playing, but he is coaching. Jason Williams is noted in the forum, actually. I'm not sure who said it. I'll have to look it up. I apologize. But Jason Williams with the fancy passes to Kwame Brown. That's good.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. And I'm glad Abdul-Rauf is in there as well, because would that be like one of his first appearances since he pretty much retired? Or have we seen him since then?
The last time was with a brief stint with the Grizzlies in 2001. So I think so.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's cool to see, because I know his career kind of got derailed after that protest he did during the anthem. Mm. So, yeah, it's cool to see him back in the mix.
So, yeah, captain of the Ghost Ballers is Mike Bibby, co-captain Ricky Davis, Mo Evans, our friend Mo Evans. followed you briefly on Twitter, I believe.
That was Mo Ager, but...
Yeah. Oh, wasn't it? It was Mo Ager. Another okay. Mo. Oh, okay, my mistake there. Marcus Banks, Ivan Johnson, and the coach is George Gervin.
Ivan Johnson went to the same college as I did, so...
Oh, that's cool.
He's a bit of a favourite of mine, I guess. A homer favourite.
the Ball Hogs, who are guaranteed to win because their captain is Brian Scalabrine.
Yeah.
And co-captain Josh Childress, Derek Byers, Razul Butler, Dominic McGuire, and their coach is Rick Barry. Very appropriate, considering he's where he filled up the baskets back in the 60s and 70s. Tri-State captain is Jermaine O'Neal, co-captain Bonzi Wells, spent the rest of his career in China, as I recall. Xavier Silas, Lee Nalon, Mike Jones, and the coach is Dr. J, Julius Irving. I think he's in his late 60s now, so he's not actually a player coach, but can still dunk, if you recall that video he posted a few years back.
Yeah, that's crazy.
The Power is Captain Corey Maggette, co-captain Katina Mobley, team of Jerome Williams, Deshaun Stevenson, Moochie Norris, and coached by Clyde Drexler.
One second. Corey Maggette, why aren't you following us anymore on Twitter?
Yeah. That was a shame. Must have thought we were someone else. the captain of the Killer Threes is Chauncey Billups, co-captain Stephen Jackson, Reggie Evans, Larry Hughes, Brian Cook, and Charles Oakley is listed as the player coach.
You know, this one's actually my favorite to win the tournament, because I think they have the most players that have less years removed from the NBA. Mm. Does that make sense? So
I think so, like, yeah.
Stephen Jackson retired only a couple of years ago. Same with, like, I think Reggie Evans was in there only a few years ago. And yeah. So I think anybody who has the most recent NBA experience is probably served better in these kinds of tournaments.
That's a fair comment. And Trilogy, the final team, captain of Kenyon Martin, co-captain Al Harrington, a couple of former Nuggets there, Rashad McCants, James White, James Flight White, that is, Dion Glover, there's a name from the past, the early 2000s, and coach from the Bad Boy Pistons, Rick Mahorn. So a lot of familiar names there, to say the least, and a lot of star power, actually.
Yeah, definitely. And I will say, Rashad McCants, man, that throws me back to NBA Live 06.
Mm, absolutely. So, yeah, it's going to be fun to watch that. I don't know what it's going to be televised on and whether we'll get to see much of it here in Australia, but it's cool to see that kind of league. I'm sure we'll see some, well, you know, being online, we're going to catch some highlights one way or the other. So it will be, you know, interested to see whether some of those players, you know, with how well they can still ball, because definitely some big names there and a couple of Hall of Famers.
There are definitely a lot of players in there that I want to see, like, how they are now and, you know, whether they've still got it. Like, particularly Kwame Brown, I'd like to see him kind of be a star player of the tournament, as silly as that sounds. But, you know, he was never a player that I particularly had anything against, so I would like to see him have a good tournament. I also had that, what was it, become a legend or being legendary mode or something like that with him. So
creating a legend, I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was a lot of fun. 2K13 or 2K12?
Yeah, that was 13. 13, yeah. I skipped 12, I think.
We need to bring that back, the creating a legend. Good alternative to my career.
But, yeah, it was a cool mode. I think it's something that maybe even NBA Live could check out in the future, maybe.
Be the traditional approach, wouldn't it?
It would be.
So that has brought us to the end of another episode of the NLSC podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, we certainly encourage you to listen, to tune in every week. You can subscribe to us on iTunes if you like. You can also find us on the Stitcher app. Just search NLSC podcast and there we are, for Android and iOS devices, of course. Or keep streaming on the NLSC itself, as long as you're tuning in and enjoying the chatter. That's the main thing. Also, as always, invite you to connect with us on social media. We're on Twitter at the NLSC, Facebook, facebook.com/the NLSC, and of course the NLSC itself, nb-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. Keep it locked. But until next week, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Kenny.
And we're out like the shoe companies after listening to LeVar Ball.